Good morning, Barbados. Welcome to Brastack Sunday for June 3rd. I'm Sanka Price, your moderator for today's program, in which we focus on the economic reality facing Barbados and the implications for the Motley administration. We also examine the political developments in light of the move by Bishop Joseph Atherley to become the leader of the opposition. We're getting some feedback here, Dennis. Serious feedback. Thank you. Sorry about that, ladies and gentlemen. We're just getting a little technical thing here. Right, so we will be looking at the economic reality, as I said, facing the Motley administration, because the International Monetary Fund, she's indicated that they will be here. In fact, they'll be coming on Tuesday, the same day that we'll be having the ceremonial opening of Parliament. And we'll help us examine this. We have at least three economists. We have two presently with us. That's Marla Ducran from Trinidad. She's on the line right now. Good morning, Marla.
Hi, good morning, thank you for having me.
Pleasure is mine. And of course, we have in studio Mr. Shane Lowe. And in terms of our and the other one we're supposed to get hold of very shortly will be Mr. Jeremy Stephen. And looking at the political economy and the political implications of all these developments will be the esteemed Dr. George Bell, and he's now settling in. But we need to remind you before we do anything that this program is possible with the kind compliments of Williams Industries Incorporated.
You do not have to be a roofing expert to know that a metal sheet will rust where it is joined. That is one reason why the beautiful permaclad U-panel and R-panel roof sheet sold at Williams Metals will outlast other roofing materials. Permaclad, colorclad, and corrugated sheets are cut to the exact length that you will need, up to 40 feet and even longer. That means no joins from ridge to eave. Colorclad sheets come with a factory-painted finish in white, blue, green, red, brown, and yellow, and are fitted with screws for added resistance, tested to withstand high winds up to 130 miles an hour. Get a rail roof supplied at competitive prices, delivered to you today from Williams Metals. Simply call Williams at Kane Garden St. Thomas, 425-2000, or Lowlands Christ Church, 428-1500.
Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.
Welcome back to Brastack Sunday. As I said, I'm Sanka Price. Our producer this morning is the one and only Dennis Johnson. Of course, you can participate in today's program by calling us at 4341790 or via WhatsApp at 266-4862. First up, Ms. Motley, Prime Minister Motley, made the disclosure on Friday that Barbados will no longer be paying any debts, basically suspending payments. We're seeing on the WhatsApp that some people are suggesting that Barbados is going to actually default on loans. Some people are also saying that Barbados seems close to bankruptcy. Now, let's deal with that first before we deal with anything else. Marla, I have you on the air first. Ladies first. What is your take on that? Is this a default?
I suppose a lot of it is just the wording and the language we use. I mean, the Prime Minister herself said that the fact that we have $1.7 billion Barbados dollars in arrears, having been racked up by the previous administration over a period of time, that in itself represents a default. The fact that you have not been paying your bills to the extent of $1.7 billion is what she was saying, is that it basically you have reneged on your obligation, meaning the previous government. So from that standpoint, already there has been a default, of a certain order. Now, what I think most people mean when they say default is government bonds and other government obligations, right? Now, default means that you are not paying and honoring your obligation. What Barbados is doing, as far as I understand from what the current administration has articulated, is that they are engaging in debt restructure talks and negotiations with the creditors. So the bondholders and the treasury bill holders will be engaging in negotiations with the government. She already said that the interest on domestic bonds and treasury bills will be honored, but when there is a maturity, meaning there is a principal payment due, that the creditors will be asked to roll over those obligations, which is not a huge departure from the way it's been for the past couple of years, to be quite honest. So that does not signal a default in the sense that I am not going to honor my obligations. What she's saying is we will honor interest payments until renegotiation and restructure has been agreed between the government and the creditors. On the external debt, meaning the foreign currency denominated debt, she did say that no debt payments will be made, given that the level of reserves is so low, it's just over 200 million US at this point in time. And so that signals that there will be an engagement with the external bondholders as well, and the external creditors, and their debt will have to be renegotiated as well. So not a default in the sense that there is no intention to honor the obligation, but there is now a movement to renegotiate all terms and conditions of existing obligations with the creditors.
All right. Thank you, Marla. Shane, looking at it from the local perspective of this whole idea of just rolling over the debt again, the NIS, for example, they would have quite a bit of money invested in with the government, but also about the bondholders and whatnot. From the perspective of the local investor, how do you think they would view this? Is this a negative? Is it a positive? Are there losers in this whole thing?
Well, I think that the more or less the writing has been on the wall for some sort of reprofiling for a while. Last May, the Minister of Finance at the time announced that he would reprofile the debt of the Central Bank and the NAS. And I think generally investors, the fact that you saw over the last 3 or 4 years, investors reducing their exposure to the government, private investors that is, so banks, insurance companies, as well as shifting the portfolio from holding longer term debt to shorter term debt, given that that is usually seen as a less risky move, I think the writing was on the wall. I think the question now will be, what will such a restructuring or reprofiling, depending on how you want to term it, look like, and what are the potential implications for the creditors going forward? You've had a variety of scenarios across the Caribbean of this happening. So Jamaica, for example, decided to ask the existing bondholders to give back in their securities and take new securities that had lower interest rates and longer times to pay, which gave the government some room in terms of the amount of money they had to pay every year, both in terms of interest costs as well as the principal they had to repay. You've had scenarios in Grenada, as an example, where instead of doing that, the creditors were asked to actually take a haircut, which means that instead of getting back on maturity $100, you might get back $50. It has a similar effect in reducing the interest costs, but it just means that obviously you don't get back. If you put $100 in, you don't get back as much as you did before. So I think the question will be to what are these scenarios, or what are going to be the outcomes of this restructuring, and what are the potential impacts on the creditors, and overall the potential impact on their profitability and financial stability.
Mm-hmm. And Dr. Bell, good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah. What are the implications of the political implications of this in terms of the standing of the government, that they have taken this decision? How do you think it would be perceived in the public arena?
Well, the Barrels Labor Party, in its critique of the Democratic Labor Party government, has been saying all the time that the economic condition is there and that they know that serious things have to be done if they should achieve government. On the other hand, they're saying that the reasons why we are in the condition that we are now is related to the policies that were in place. And the fact that they are a new regime, if they come in as a new government, they can pursue different policies to the extent that it is practical. Now, the mere fact that something like this can happen changes the way in which people would look at the future. And that is very much tied in with what we call confidence. And we know that there is a strong association between confidence and investment and the potential for growth. So I think that people will be saying we have had an election, and the election has been decisive in putting a new regime in place with all authority, so that you cannot say that they're in any way going to be inhibited by a critique within parliament or in relation to legislation. You have a full open hand to proceed with the changes that you were saying would be required. So in a sense, it gives everybody a space and a chance to look to see whether Barbados can turn itself around. And I think that one of the things about Barbadian culture is that we are fairly confident that we can usually pull ourselves out of a hole. What you cannot do is that if you are in the hole and cannot see above the hole, you have difficulty, which is the condition of a previous regime. It was within the cave, could not see above the hole at the top of the cave. A new government says we have a different vision. We have a broader vision. We have a vision that can give people hope for the future. So I think in that sense that people are going to say, let's give the government the space to do what it says it's going to do. But I know that they're feeling the thing materially, and people can lose patience if they don't think that with all your talk, you cannot satisfy their hopes, mm-hmm. and they will start to react at that point. But I think the timeline on that is still some distance away.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Bell. Of course, as I said earlier in my preamble, the IMF will be here on Tuesday. And one of the things we want to look at, what does this really mean for Barbados? I tried to get Dr. Worrell to be here. This is Dr. Delelworth, the former Central Bank Governor, just to hear his input. He couldn't make it because he's on assignment in Belize, but he sent us a note. So we'll try to play for you right now.
Minister Motley is badly advised. The most precious assets the government of Barbados possesses in facing the current foreign exchange crisis are its long-term exchange rate peg and its unblemished record of servicing its debt in full and on time. Government must preserve these assets at all costs. The key to doing so, as I have publicly advocated, is to cut the public service by approximately 1,500 jobs and to reduce subsidies to government-owned entities by 10% in the first instance. If this is done, I calculate that government will be able to meet its debt obligations in full, relieve pressure on the foreign exchange market, and balance the fiscal current account. There will be no further need for borrowing from the central bank. It is on the basis of this commitment that the government should open negotiations with the IMF. Thank you.
And as I said, that is Dr. Worrell. Basically, he's suggesting, he has been saying this for a little while now, and he's saying that the key to all this is that we need to cut the public sector by approximately 1,500 jobs, and to reduce subsidies to government-owned entities, that is all the statutory corporations like CVC and et cetera, by 10% in the first instance. And if we can do this, then we will be well on our way to improving things. First reaction, Ms. Dukeran.
There are elements of what Dr. Worrell says that I agree with. However, you know, he touched on reducing government expenditure on wages and salaries and subsidies. But to be fair, I mean, as the Prime Minister has outlined, the amount of money paid in debt servicing is even higher than that of wages and salaries and also of subsidies. So I can't see how you can fix your fiscal deficit, which Governor Worrell has said is a priority. I can't see how you can fix the deficit and not address the debt servicing costs. And in that regard, you will recall the Prime Minister said on Friday in her address that they want to balance the budget by 2019. So to do that, you're going to have to address all the major expenditure line items in the fiscal budget. And the three largest ones are transfers and subsidies, wages and salaries, and interest payments or debt servicing on the pool. So I think that's one critical element of his recommendation that is missing.
Mm-hmm. But the IMF coming, what does that mean for Barbados?
Well, you know, to be honest, I know a lot of people disagree with me on this. I think it would be a blessing. I know that, and this is partly because of this is, you know, how politicians posture and the rhetoric that they use, where they demonize the IMF. So you can't blame the people for thinking that the IMF is the worst thing that can happen. But if you look at the outcomes that Jamaica and Grenada, as Shane had alluded to, if you look at the outcomes that they've had under their recent IMF programs, they've actually found sustainability and stability and regained growth as well, to the benefit of all their citizens in a matter of, say, 3 years or so of reforms and adjustments. So I actually think it's a very positive thing that the IMF is going to be there on Tuesday in the context of a debt/balance of payments crisis, as 200 million in reserves would suggest against 100 million of foreign debt obligations this month. You really don't have a choice anyway. But luckily, I think it's a positive development. I think that once the stakeholders, being private sector, public sector, and labor, work in conjunction with the IMF to implement the necessary reforms and adjustments in a very front-loaded and meaningful program starting now, then in a few years, we can see things return to positive growth and sustainability, and it will be to the benefit of everyone. Mm-hmm. However, there have been instances where IMF programs have not gone quite so well, and we have to acknowledge that risk. You know, you've seen it in Suriname and Belize, for example. I don't believe that that's the route that Barbados will go, given what I've seen of this new administration and their willingness to engage in the necessary reforms and corrective measures. And the political will to do so. I think it will go splendidly. I have all faith that all the stakeholders will have all their hands on deck to do what is necessary to restore Barbados's stability and growth in a few years.
You said, well, front-loaded IMF program, but mm-hmm. as a man in the street, how would the IMF program mean, and I'm going to ask this to all you, the lovely gentlemen I have here in the studio, what does an IMF program mean for the man in the street? How would it mean? What would it mean for governance and fiscal management going forward? Marla, I'll give you a little quickie on that, and then I'll turn to the gentleman here in the studio. What does this front-loaded IMF program mean for the man in the street? Let's break it down.
Okay, so the IMF had prescribed a primary fiscal surplus of 7.5% of GDP. That means that the government has to cut the expenditure quite significantly. Also, the Prime Minister had said that she wants to balance the budget by next year. So you're talking about, 600, 700 million being cut from the budget annually. It means that for the man on the street, the government will not be able to support as much in terms of wages and salaries and consumption of goods and services and contracts that it gives out, for example. And so it might affect the man on the street in terms of his spending power and in terms of the level of activity, economic activity that is taking place in the economy for the next, say, year or two.
All right. Thank you. Shane, you want to take that? How would it affect the man on the street, an IMF program?
Well, let me first say that I would support an IMF program. I think that if you look at some of the Economic Society's releases over the last, 6 months or so, we've mentioned the government needed to secure a cheaper, more sustainable source of financing for up to 2 to 4 years, things like that. That essentially equals the IMF, right, without saying those three letters, right? Mm-hmm. Because as Marla said, you're in a situation right now where every year the reserves have declined since 2013, right, consistently. And the main driver of that is because the government's credit rating has gotten to a point where it cannot secure foreign financing at reasonable rates. And so this was bound to happen, and we would have preferred if it happened a little earlier, because the magnitude of the adjustment now will need to be greater, but certainly is still a positive thing that has happened. Now, what will it mean for the man in the street? So if I quote from the last Article 4 that was released last week, which is the annual report the IMF does on the
That's the one that the government and the front administration delayed from January.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So there are a number of things that they've mentioned. They've focused primarily on cutting expenditure and not so much on increasing taxes. So while it means that the average person might not have to pay more taxes, they might have to pay for some other things. So it mentions, for example, in relation to the state-owned entities, further measures aimed at cost recovery, cost reduction, and divestment will also be required, which may include a redesign of social benefits delivered through SOEs, as well as a reduction in the workforce. Right? Now, what does that mean? It means, for example, that there are some social services that are currently free or the state provides and you don't pay for upfront that you may have to pay for. It means that there are some state-owned entities that might provide services today that might be viewed as being more of a cost than a benefit to the entire country or to the government, and those operations might have to be scaled back or they might have to be divested, and that may mean, for example, a potential loss of jobs. These are the types of things the IMF has written in the Article 4. Now, what the IMF didn't really prescribe was debt restructuring within the Article 4 report. They didn't speak to it very much. So the question is, to what extent can the reduction in the interest costs kind of replace the need to reduce expenditure as much? That's the first question. And the second question is, to what extent will the need to finance things like this South Coast sewage project, now the Bridgetown one, the roads, etc. These are things that weren't actually included in the IMF's mm-hmm. estimates. To what extent will those mean further cuts in other areas? But I think the overarching thing is that it will mean expenditure cuts. And then the question is, how will the government compensate and ensure that those who are likely to be affected are not affected as adversely mm-hmm. As they otherwise might be?
All right, thank you, Shane. Oh, Dr. Bell, political implications of all of this?
I think that we would have to look at this issue in relation to how the government will negotiate if the IMF is going to be in charge of a program of recovery. The government has set out again in its campaign that it is going to bring certain measures that should provide relief from certain areas of austerity that the Barbadian society has been going through for almost a decade. And it is saying that it is compelled to do this because this is the only way we could get back growth, and it is the best way to invest in development. And I think that is partly because the government is putting the human person very much at the center of what it is about. My colleague economists tend very often at times to deal without removing the human factor. And I think that, the without being too personal, the former governor of the central bank is very much into that. Mm-hmm. And we have to always remember that all of the social sciences, all of the scientific studies, all of the models, if they remove themselves from the fact that we are dealing with human beings, you're going nowhere. So that must always be the constraint. That must always be the qualifying factor. That must always be a major part of the negotiation. And we are human beings as well, negotiating with other human beings. So when we tell the IMF to come in, we're not dealing with a machine, and we don't turn into machines. There are two sets of human beings talking to each other. Now, the historical record of the IMF is what is often problematic for people, because at one time the IMF was very unfeeling and had a very bad misconception of what was really requirements of developing countries. It went through a lot of pressure for that, and it has transformed to some extent over last 30 years or so. And that is why we can look now at Jamaica and Grenada and so on and say that they went to the IMF and they seem to have come out all right. If you go back 30 years, you would say that the IMF destroyed Jamaica and made Jamaicans suffer for long, long periods of time. And all of us in the so-called third world or developing world have learned that lesson, and that is why there's that resistance. It is one of the reasons why, in the case of Barbados too, we hold on to this issue of the fixed exchange rate so desperately, because the nature of our resources tell us that if we go there on what was a traditional IMF proposal, that we're going to suffer. And some of us have lived in countries where those mechanical proposals from the IMF were implemented, and we just see the austerity that we have been going through is nothing like what you would see in countries like that. You have to imagine going into a supermarket and seeing shelves bare. People reduced to eating at a level that they would have thought that they would be feeding the chickens with, and things like that, you know. So we in Barbados have not gone there, and I don't think we want to go there. I know there are some people that have a kind of subsistence backyard economic view of things, that we could live off of 2 yams and goat milk, okay? But most people cannot do that and will not do that, and they're asking their political leaders not to carry them there, so that you have to be creative enough, innovative enough, skilled enough, and have the negotiation ability to get the thing adjusted, but still remember that you're dealing with humanity, with human beings. And nobody's saying that it is easy, but I think that the casual way in which some of the economists go down the road of saying we just have to deal with numbers and adjust this to that and so on, and all the time that means that equals hurting people, hurting them very badly. Some of them will die from the hurt that you put on them if you go that way, and so on. And therefore, I think that one of the qualifying things that are very important in the government's vision is that it has gone and committed itself to some critical areas like pensions, like education, transport, health, and so on, that tie it into humanity, tie it into the human condition. And some people will say, how can you do both? As a matter of fact, the former regime was saying that. How are you going to do these things and still go to the IMF? Well, that is the big test now. First of all, are we going to the IMF? If you're going to the IMF, then are we going to negotiate? And are we going to say that this is at the center of ourselves, because this is developmental? And one of the problems, again, from where we are coming from, is that the element of development, the element of the human factor, had been drawn out of everything. And we were living in austerity with no meaning.
Thank you, Dr. Bell. We'll take a commercial break here. Don't forget, this program is brought to you with the kind compliments of Billings Industries Incorporated. For business supplies, big or small,
at Billings Metals, we have it all. Now is the time for you to fence your property with galvanized green, white, or brown chain link fencing and our brown band galvanized pole pipes, which are the longest lasting. We will give you a free estimate too on all your fencing materials. For building supplies, big or small, at Williams
Metals, we have it all. At Williams Metals, we have it all. Visit their website at www.williamsmetals.bb.